from the hat that you get to wear at Jane and being able to witness so many other people's practices, do you see some consistencies across the industry that differentiate those people who are being successful in their business?
They're unapologetic about their business being a business as well as a practice.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass. These are the themes we are exploring. So it is an interesting time right now, and if ever we needed to call on our inner alter ego of badassness, this is the time to do it. My guest today is Allison Taylor. She is the co-founder of Jane App, an electronic health record platform and application out of Vancouver. And Allison and I have known each other for a number of years. And when we booked this podcast several weeks ago, we were not in the midst of managing COVID-19. Over the last several weeks, there has been a tremendous shift in our industry as healthcare providers and her need to transition and pivot rapidly as a business owner. This episode is not about health. It's not about technology. It's about opportunity. It's about the chance that we all have as entrepreneurs to step into a higher role and the requirements and necessities that need to be in place in order for that to happen. Allison is a seasoned entrepreneur. She thinks strategically, and that's been part of her success. But the message that she shares today is so relatable to so many of us. It is truly my pleasure to introduce you to Allison Taylor of Jane App. Allison Taylor, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thanks for being here, for having me here, I should say.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited to jump into this conversation. And we had this booked a long time ago. And before we had this booked, I was really excited to talk to you as one of the founders of Jane App. And I am still excited to talk to you in that context. But right now we are in the midst of COVID-19 and managing these rapidly evolving pieces in our respective businesses. And so I'm also really delighted to be able to start to pull apart your way of thinking as it pertains to crisis management in a practice and in a tech business and as an entrepreneur in general. So Allison, can we start off by you sharing with our audience who you are and why you're so uniquely positioned to speak to this?
Who you are? That's such a deep question. I'm like, how far back should we be going?
So You've got two minutes.
I know, 2 minutes. Okay. So I own a multidisciplinary practice called Canopy that opened 8 years ago. And that it's a mix of everything. So physio, chiro, massage, naturopath, osteo, midwives, counseling. And in that process of opening that practice, I was looking for software that could service all those practitioners for online booking and electronic charting, and couldn't find anything that really was flexible enough for them or that was branded in a way that I wanted, because we were spending a lot of money on the build outs, the TIs, and the website. And I knew that we were also expecting many other small business owners to start their practice within my practice, and they needed to attract patients through the online booking side. And so my, who is now my co-founder, Trevor, his marketing agency was doing my website and all my branding, and he offered just to build something as part of my website for the online booking and electronic charting. And then I used that for a year, and then that sort of launched into Jane a year and a half later after people started asking about it. And Trevor suggested that we sort of go into business together and build it out into a complete practice management software and license it to other businesses. I always say before that happened, Canopy was sort of running, you know, a clinic only has so much space, and it was running almost at full capacity. And I was looking at franchising it because I had the brand and I had the software. And so I was looking at kind of maybe putting some of them around other places, but ended up going in this direction. So Jane is being used by practitioners all around the world. So North America, Australia, the UK, New Zealand English speaking currently, although we are in Estonian and a few other languages just very randomly.
That's very random.
Yeah, it is. I know. But primarily the English speaking world right now.
Have you always been an entrepreneur?
You know what? I hated that label for a long time because entrepreneurs meant to me people. I used to say it was like people who would put their family in a boat and just sail out to sea with no idea where they were going. And I'm not that. I'm not that at all. I'm actually, I take calculated risks and small risks and maybe quite a lot of them over time, but I'm not the risk at all type of business person. And that was always in my mind what entrepreneur meant. But yeah, I like doing new things. So I think for that part of entrepreneurship, I really identify with. I like learning. My favorite thing when I first started managing a clinic was figuring out how an Excel spreadsheet would work. Like the best day would be I'd come home and learn something new about how my accounting software works so I could do a better job. So I don't like doing the same thing over and over again. So I suppose I have to be an entrepreneur in order to obtain that in my daily life.
And in building out your practice, can you just back up a little bit and share, like you have this really thriving space and you had, if you have a practice that you're looking at starting to franchise, then you've got a flow of patients, which is not necessarily mirrored by everyone else's experience. What do you attribute that to? What was your sort of secret sauce in bringing so many people through the door when you launched that?
Well, I mean, to be honest, it's a room rental model. So my revenue at Canopy actually comes from other practitioners paying rent. And then their revenue comes from the patient income. And it means that it's management easy. So like in order to franchise, you have to have something that's easy to manage. My plan initially wasn't to franchise, but margins in clinics are also not very big. And so that's sort of the game. It's just math. And so if the margins aren't very big, but it's easy to run, you're going to just have to do lots of them in order for it to add up to anything significant. And then it's always pull. So both in Jane and at Canopy, I had practitioners who wanted to join Canopy, but live farther away. And so they're like, oh, it'd be so great if there's one of these in Squamish or one in Steveston. I started thinking, like, it's always just pursuing those ideas. And for me, it's almost 100% of the time pull, and same for Jane. So people ask, you know, for something, they want something included, or they're looking, they want to bring Jane into another country, or they want to talk about Jane on their, they want to partner with Jane, have an integration. We almost always respond to pull. And that's just so much easier as an entrepreneur to follow those areas of pull than it is to push your way into things. And it's surprising where those areas of pull come from. But back to Canopy. Yeah, it was really just that margins aren't phenomenal in business in clinic. It's just the reality of the way clinics work. So it was just solving a problem. And the problem was that you ran out of capacity for space and other people wanted the same experience in different geographies. And I had a model that I think I could just transplant easily.
I love how you have all of these intuitive understandings of business, and yet the notion when I said before, do you consider yourself an entrepreneur? You're like, well, not really because of these sorts of things. Like, I suppose maybe I am. But, you know, in speaking to so many entrepreneurs, some people intuitively see these things and other people don't. And I love that you made that reference. I mean, listen, if you have a model that doesn't have great margins, the only way you're going to earn income is if you have multiple versions of that same thing. And I think one of the things that happens when you work in this industry, so yes, you've got a clinic and now you have Jane, is that affords you the opportunity to really see what other people are doing in their businesses and how other people are being successful. From the hat that you get to wear at Jane and being able to witness so many other people's practices, do you see some consistencies across the industry that differentiate those people who are being successful in their business?
They're unapologetic about their business being a business as well as a practice. So some of my favorite people that I've ever spoken to about the business side of running clinics, I remember this one woman whom I adore. Her name is Diane Lee, and she's a kind of a veteran in the physiotherapy world. And she's like, this is a business. This is a business as well as my practice, but I work hard for this. And so she's like, I don't do this for 3%. And I was like, I love that. Mm-hmm. I probably I'm like, I don't know if I have actual approval to like quote that, but I quote it all the time because being a business owner, especially I think a female business owner, and this I've learned this actually after clinic and now into Jane, is there you are taking a lot of risk being a business owner, and you're taking on all the bills and you're taking on the rents and the responsibilities, and it's really hard. You want to please everybody, but they also don't have the full picture understanding you do. And this is what I'm even saying right now at Jane. I said, yes, we want to be as empathetic as we can to our customers, of whom I am one, but we also have to be responsible to Jane, like as a business mm-hmm. and our employees. And you have to find the balance. And sometimes from the outside, it can look different if people don't have all the information, and they're going to make judgment calls on that. And they're going to be noisy about it. So you have to be very comfortable that what you are doing is the right decision, even if people who have a smaller slice of the pot, like the picture, they can only see a fraction of it, have a different understanding. And so I think that's a lesson that took me a long time to learn. And one of the ways that I did that, and I tell people this, I chose one person in my professional life whom I really respect. And I just think if they're happy with my decisions, and then I took one person in my personal life, so my mother. So it's my mother, and then I have a board member on my board who is a lawyer. He's a tech lawyer in Vancouver. And if you mention his name anywhere to anybody, they just respond with complete respect. And you know he's very well respected throughout the community for his moral compass and his wisdom. And so I take these two people, and I think if they're proud of me, if they knew everything that I knew, and they'd be proud of my decision, then I'm going to stand. Then I can stand behind it 100%, even when people who know less are giving you negative feedback, and that will come. Like that will come forever. There will never be a time that people aren't fully focused on just their perspectives, because we're all the heroes in our own story. So we also have to kind of respect the fact that where they're coming from is a place of less understanding, and then figure out if you can communicate to them, knowing what they're seeing, but also knowing what you know. It's challenging, but
it's totally challenging, and I feel like it's something you need to practice. And I'm watching people's behaviors right now, and there's a ton of opportunity adjacent to the challenges that we are facing. And I feel like the biggest hurdle for so many people is the mindset and being able to step over the respective thresholds for these different pieces. And I love what you're referencing, because it's leadership, right? It's being comfortable with other people not always being happy with your response or your answer. Are you still tempted to get pulled into the needing to justify where you are at, or are you over that and you just manage the situation?
I always justify wherever possible. I always say we're probably overly transparent at Jane. Like someone will make a comment on a Facebook post, and I will respond with like two paragraphs of like, here, let me tell you all the reasons why we're doing it this way. And I'll often say, I'm so sorry that you disagree with the way we're approaching this. And then I'll try to fill in the why. And even at Jane, at the company, so we have 110 staff or something, and we always explain the why behind everything, and we always tell everyone there is no point where you should be repeating something and not understanding why it's the way we're behaving, because you can't really communicate appropriately if you don't really get the heart. We call it Jane's heart too. We're always operating through Jane's heart, and if you don't understand the reason behind something, you can't really talk about it authentically. So I overshare probably. I overshare all the time because there's nothing really to hide, I think. But so I don't think it's defending myself. It's not being defensive. It's just being transparent. And I think if you've made those decisions, like if I've made a decision that I can stand behind ethically and morally, then I shouldn't have any problem explaining why I'm making that decision. So it's actually kind of a litmus test too. Is this the right decision? Like, could I defend this if someone asked me about it in a way that feels, you know, authentic? And usually you can.
Have you gone back on decisions you've made?
Oh yeah.
Was it the end of the world?
No, I tell everybody, even usually before podcasts, I try to like actually mention that I hold strong opinions loosely. And as soon as I learn new information, my opinion may change. But it's always because new information comes through that I didn't have before. And there's no way you can know everything. Like, think about the information the government's putting out right now about all the help that you can receive, it's changing daily. So we put out a whole bunch of, we put out a small business response plan last week. Oh, everything seems like it's a month. Right? Every day seems like a month right now.
Yes, I say that to my kids every night. How was your month today, guys?
Exactly. I know my kids are supposed to be back at school today. And so there, I had them watch a French movie.
Nice.
I yell recess every few hours and they have to either ride, like I have a stationary bike and they have to ride it or they have to go outside on the trampoline. I'm like, and then I'm doing all this while I'm trying to work. It's just every day is just madness. But anyway, so we put out the small business response plan and a few days later it was actually completely incorrect because new information came out. And so we have to update it and circulate. But that's how decision making works. That's how life works. So of course you're going to have incorrect opinions or you're going to say the wrong thing and then you might gain new information and then you can change your mind. It might look different.
What is your advice to other small business owners and clinic owners and associates and people whose livelihood has been rocked right now in terms of the step and the path moving forward? Because I think we were talking about this a little bit before it started, that there's really sort of two camps. There's the, oh my gosh, I can't do it. I'm putting my head in the ground. And there's other people going, wow, I'm actually going to lean into this. I think there's some real opportunity. What's your advice to the general landscape as people are trying to navigate this rapidly evolving situation?
It is changing very, very quickly. And I think natural personalities are going to play into this, whether you like, as I was saying before, I like learning and innovating and change, but there's a lot of people that just want their day to be the same every single day. They want to know what to expect. And for them, that's their happy place. So your personality will affect this for sure. So just give yourself some grace, like number one. But we are all in the exact same situation. And we were saying this before. We've seen, especially in the tech world, many, many tech companies, they operate in this very odd way. It's not small businessy at all, where they raise a ton of money and they go into something, they go into burn, cash burn. So they spend more than they make and they have something called an end cash date where they're going to run out of money and they have to raise money before that point. So in the normal world, we often see companies running out of money. And that to me is like the most stressful situation because you're in that alone. Like that's your own business. You're just doing that. You've made decisions that have made that happen. But in this particular pandemic situation, it's not even just your profession. It's not even just your community. It's our entire country. It's our entire world. So the response is going to be very different. And everyone is supporting everybody. No one has the same business as you, but is thriving down the street. Like we're all very much in this together. And there's going to be money and capital that starts to flow next month. And it will change every day how to access it and what it looks like. But I think panic can hurt because it puts you into this state of ineffectiveness. It freezes you. And so just finding a few places of like information that you trust and then just take one step every day. Like people actually often ask, how did Canopy start and how did it end up at Jane? And I'm like, I literally just take one step every day. You take that one call or you say yes to one meeting. And it's the same here. We're just, okay, well, what's the one thing I can maybe apply for or one piece of information I can look up? But it does feel like small steps do get you somewhere, even though they're small.
Well, yeah. And it was funny. My kids were watching a program this morning. It was educational, but they were being taught by the television this morning. And they were talking about laws of physics as it pertains to motion. And they're like, it is a law that if something is not moving, it doesn't have a tendency to ever really move again. And things that are already set in motion have a tendency to be able to continue to move. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's just the most perfect analogy for where everybody's at right now. Just even those small steps, at least you are in motion. I would love for you, Allison, to just share with everybody. I mean, you run a company that provides electronic health records to practitioners, but I know you guys also in the last week really leaned into the needs of your practitioner community and the opportunity that was on the table. I would love for you to share a little bit about what it is that you guys offered in the last week and what it took to be able to step up as a team and make that happen so quickly.
Yeah, we launched a telehealth feature, which I've been calling not just a young feature, but a a preemie feature. It really was born well before its due date. So when we're talking about it, and this is what I mean with transparency and communication. So this is how we talk to our support team. We're talking externally about it in this way. There's some work needed just to get it up to newborn status. So, you know, it works right now on just Chrome on computers. But by the end of the week, we're looking to have a native app submitted to the App Store so that we can have support for iPads and iPhones. But all of that stuff normally would have happened before we ever launched it. Like, we never would have launched it with such little capability for device and browser support. So right now it's basically Chrome to Chrome on a computer or a desktop, and it works on Android phones. But so we just scaled it way back, and we'd been building the infrastructure for a while, which is we used to be called Zane Chat internally, because that was our developer's name, Zane, who was working on the whole background part. So we still all call it Zane Chat. The whole team worked, honestly, 18, 20-hour days, which we don't normally do. We have a very clear work-life balance rule at Jane, where people work their 40 hours and we don't expect people to work beyond that. But that all went out the window, and this is what happens. It's crisis management. So we knew that our practices were going to have to shut down, or that they were going to need a telehealth option. So we wanted to offer it for free, because some of the other options they were going to have to pay for. So the team just rallied, and they've been just such rock stars. So we also had to put together, you know, training material. The support team's having to explain it to people. We're having to take all the feedback about what is and isn't working and improve it over this last week and moving into the next week. They have been just rock stars. It's really phenomenal. But there's no way without a team any of that could have been accomplished. So, and a team that was really behind the vision. And that's part of running Jane through Jane's heart for the last 5 years, is that you create a team that they'll work really hard when the time comes. So, yeah, I take credit for it. They've done such a good job.
But I think that's what we're seeing right now is there's such incredible stories of teams coming together where everyone is rallying, everyone is committed to the bigger vision of what it is that the clinic was about, or the small business was about, or whatever it happened to be. And in some instances, that hasn't been people's experiences, but the overwhelming view there is that, you know, this is an opportunity to really start to clear out the energy that's not going to move you through this next phase, and add new people and add new energy into what's possible moving forward. What do you think is possible moving forward? You're someone who bridges the gap between an in-person type business and an online business. Where do you think we're going to land in terms of the evolution of business generally?
In healthcare,
we can speak to healthcare specifically. I think the landscape of opportunities is shifting across all sectors.
Yeah, well, we're experiencing it in two ways. One, our entire team is obviously working from home. We made that call over two weeks ago, and it felt fun. Like, oddly enough, we made that call on a Thursday, and then by Monday, I think it was sort of everyone was mandating work from home. But on the Thursday, it felt very early. But 5 days later, it felt like, of course, that's the decision you would have to make. So we're all working remote. So we're experiencing the change that way as a business, which, of course, is, you know, we're a tech company. So working from home, it was already something that was not hard to do. But in the healthcare system, which is where a lot of our customers, and then obviously the clinics, my clinic is experiencing, is that that's not possible. But what I'm seeing, which is just incredible, is insurance companies and the government are both moving incredibly quickly right now, considering the systems they have to work within are very slow moving historically. Like, everything takes forever to happen. And this is just sort of everything's happening at light speed. But we're seeing the adoption of telehealth in insurance, which was the biggest blocker to anyone moving into telehealth, is that insurance companies wouldn't cover it. And all of a sudden,
real life.
It's my daughter FaceTiming me from downstairs. This is how we talk to each other now in this house. It's FaceTimes me.
Tell us
all
in real life terms how life is going to shift as a result.
I know. Well, yeah, this is serious. I have to tell her not to.
Well, I said to a practitioner this morning, I think we're accelerating in the healthcare industry with respect to the delivery of telemedicine. I think we just jumped ahead 4 years of how long it would normally take this industry to move.
I agree with you. And I think what we're going to see is actually So they've pulled back. A lot of people have closed their practices to try and prevent the spread of COVID, which is, you know, obviously it's supposedly working well here in BC so far. We're having optimistic results coming in showing that it's a 12% increase of cases when we'd have expected 24 based on other people's curves. So I think Canada's actually took the message and it's starting to work. But I'm expecting that what will come, because most of our practitioners are allied healthcare workers,
right,
is that they're going to want the orthopedic cases also out of the hospitals. Mm-hmm. And people pulled way back, but I think they're going to have to start returning to some care in some levels. It's the hardest part is getting, I think, the mask, gowns, and gloves that are required in order to return to any sort of acute practice right now. But they'll want to, I think there's going to be a hybrid. So I think you're going to do telehealth calls to do screening at this point to say, like, do we need an in-office visit? And then they'll do an in-office visit for things that are really acute, you know, acute sprains and backs and things that are typically already clogging up the ER and the primary care system, or the, not primary care is a bad way of putting it, but the public system here in Canada. There are, part of flattening the curve is protecting that system for people who need it, who are suffering from COVID-19. So I think that there's going to be a bit of a hybrid model emerging where people will do telehealth for subsequent exercise rehab, certain things that they can do at home, and then they'll do in-office with, you know, buffered appointments so they can do more sanitization in between and more protective gear. And yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how it ends up shifting. But then I think long term, for sure, telehealth has jumped ahead. I would agree, probably 3 or 4 years in implementation and the way that the insurance company is going to handle it.
Well, how fortunate that Zane app is ready to
chat.
Or Zane chat is ready to go and pick up that slack.
You got to catch up there on some, but the team's they're working hard. I think right now 80% are saying success, and then some are still struggling with getting their video working. But of course, it's a mix of just dealing with, everyone's learning a new system. Technology is not easy for healthcare practitioners or for patients. The average person isn't super amazing at figuring out their technology. So, you know, there's a lot of different avenues to where we can find improvements, including just making it easy for people.
For sure. And I think that's just it, is that right now, I mean, what a really cool opportunity that you were able to get this out the door at a time where you would really be able to maximize adoption and feedback. And also consumers and practitioners are probably slightly more forgiving than they would otherwise normally be. And I've referenced... Right. And I've referenced this quote a few times this week. And when I was growing up on the bathroom wall, we had this picture of Stephen Leacock, who's a Canadian author. And I'm not sure the quote was originally from him, but in this moment, it was attributed to him. And it was this. It was that I'm a great believer in luck. And I find the harder I work, the more I have of it. And I feel like what you guys were able to pull together in the last week is really a perfect example of, you know, it's easy to look back and go, well, Jane was so lucky they had this thing. But you had put in so much work that when you needed to pivot on a moment's notice, you knew how to work together as a team. You knew the industry well enough that you were able to give them an offering that they would benefit from. And you knew how to communicate an imperfect offering at an imperfect time. I think it's just such a perfect example of what is possible in the face of a really challenging time. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you. We're hoping that it continues to improve. I think it's hard when you talked about the entrepreneur traits. I'm not a celebrator, and all I ever see is where we can keep improving. So I'm already past the point that it's out there. Now I'm like, it needs to get better.
So right.
It's hard to look back it's great. I'm so glad it's out there and helping people. But I'm also like, oh, we got to get that up to 90-95% success. Like, you know, you're already looking at all the places where you can improve. So we have to try very intentionally to pause and celebrate, because it's important to do so.
Well, yes, and I'm going to put my clinician hat on. I think especially in this, you know, where the world is at right now, when we have an opportunity to celebrate wins, big or small, I think it's a really poignant reminder that we should just take a few seconds and do that.
Yeah, I'm reminded to do that for the team and for my kids. Like, there's I live in the present, like very much in the present. And again, this comes down to personality. Just people are very, very different. So if things happen in the past, they're almost immediately forgotten. I'm just like, okay, done. And I'm very excited about moving on to the next challenge or figuring out the next. I'm a problem solver. Like, I love puzzles and figuring out the best way to do it. But you mentioned before building in, and luck is only there if you've done the work as well. And I was just thinking about that too. With we talk about that with our customer relationships, because we really value being relational. So I'm like, when people are sending emails, I'm like, you should be, these are people, these are human beings. So talk to, you need to talk to them like, you know, like that. Just imagine like you're explaining this to your friend. How would you talk to them? Because these are humans. And the work that we've put in to build relationship with our customer base, I think up until now, is also part of the reason why they're willing to try something that we're putting out there, or they're willing to give us some grace. And so I agree with you. Everything that you're doing at every point in your business is contributing to a moment in the future that you might need that. So I agree. Hard work does create things that appear lucky to people, again, from the outside, who have a smaller view on the whole.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Allison, I think we need to transition the interview. We have a section at the end of our interviews, and I call them our KPIs. So just like we have key performance indicators in our business, I believe that we have them in how we live our lives as well. So I've got a few rapid fire questions for you coming your way. You ready?
Yeah.
No math, not to worry. First
do I need
one.
A friend or,
what's that?
I need phone a friend or.
Yeah, you've got lifelines that you can play out here if necessary.
Pardon? Is that show even still on? Maybe I'm still dating myself.
I don't
myself.
Even remember what show that was, but I know exactly what you're talking about. with Regis Philbin, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I think we just both dated ourselves. What's the most impactful book you've ever read?
Because I'm so in the moment, I just read a book called Who You Are is What You Do, or What You Do is Who You Are by Ben Horowitz, and it's phenomenal. I would recommend everybody read it.
Okay, it'll be in the show notes. What's the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Changing what I'm doing every year. I'm either obsessed with yoga, or I'm obsessed with running, or it has to change though. I get bored of doing the same thing all the time.
And what are you doing right now?
I got a Peloton.
Oh, me too.
I know. And I got the Peloton app is amazing. I'm going to do a full plug for it here. This is the thing about customer referral. I don't get anything for referring them, but they have such a good product. So now they just added dance cardio. So my daughter and I did a full 20-minute dance class yesterday. Super fun. And then they have camps and yoga and you can do a little bit of everything on their app. It's amazing. It's well done.
Yeah, I'm loving it as well. I feel like this audience is like, okay, enough about your Peloton, Megan. Okay. But
talk about time.
Yeah, it's totally great.
And you can do it from home, so I don't have to get to the yoga studio. That's a 3-hour commitment to go to anything, but I can just get up and I don't have to get dressed. I can just do a 30-minute bike ride, and then it's just easy. It fits into my life.
Yeah, and it's fun.
It is fun. Yeah.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
I have half my head shaved, which your podcast listeners might not know, which is probably something that most people think is the most badass thing about me.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
I don't know. I'm not very badass. I had to do an insurance application form, and they were like, have you ever done like skydiving? They just listed all these things. And I was like, no. And by the end, I was like, you're really making it feel like I just haven't lived. And he's like, don't worry, you're very insurable.
You are the first person who's managed to weave insurance into this question, which I actually think is breaking new boundaries. So we're going to give you the point either way. What do you do for fun or play?
I like to work. I always say work is my fun and play. And then I love my kids. I own two things and I exercise. So that counts for work and play are all the same to me. It's
yeah,
all one thing.
And how fortunate. And my last question for you, Allison, and we kind of alluded to this before, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think entrepreneurs look so different. Like everyone can call themselves an entrepreneur and just experience it in a different way. So I'm born to be who I am, but I guess I've learned to be an entrepreneur with my personality. So the way I'm an entrepreneur is different than someone else. I don't know. This is such a hard question.
It's hard. It's this life's not meant to be easy here.
Yeah, I don't know if we can fit into boxes like that. We're all so unique.
See, this is how I know you're an entrepreneur, because you're just rebelling against the box. You're like, I don't like the rules you've given me.
Fitting in boxes. I'm not very good at that. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I guess it also depends on how you define entrepreneur, because like you said before, I hated that word. I was like, no, I'm not an entrepreneur for years. And now I say I am. I've just redefined it to what it means.
You're redefining and pushing boundaries. My friend, you are an entrepreneur, whether you like it or not. Allison Taylor, where can we send people to learn more about what you are up to and the incredible work of Jane App?
Jane.app is the domain. Easy to remember. That's the website. So lots of the stuff we're doing is there. I guess that's probably the best place.
Amazing. Well, we will send people over. We have lots of fans of your platform in our audience. Thanks so much for taking the time to be here.
Thanks for having me. That was really fun.
The Entrepology Podcast is about leveling up your mindset, your health, and your business so you can maximize your impact in this world. To that end, we're going to begin with a new series of offerings to help you have that impact you've always dreamed of. Over on the Entrepology Podcast page, we're going to start doing live broadcasts of episodes. Sometimes these will be solo episodes, and sometimes these will be with guests. This is your opportunity to interact with us live as we are recording your favorite episodes. Adjacent to our Facebook page, we also have the Entrepology Collective, a free Facebook group with hundreds of fellow entrepreneurs just like you. In the Entrepology Collective, we're going to keep you up to date on upcoming masterclasses, interact daily, as well as have new offerings like our Badass Book Club. After a 2-year hiatus, we are bringing it back. Our new April and May selections are going to be announced in the coming weeks, and we would love for you to participate in all of these new virtual offerings. I believe that when people have their health, they can change the world. That is what inspired us to start this podcast in the first place, and that is what is inspiring us to keep going. I'm so appreciative of all of you. Give us a like over on Apple iTunes and come and join us in the collective. We'll see you there.